an Osho talk. Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt, number 6.
One day, Ungo Doyo went into the hall and quoted Tozan's old saying, "Hell is not really painful. Wearing this robe, to fail to understand the great matter, that loss is the most painful." Addressing his monks, Doyo said, "You are already within this tradition. 100% is not far from 90%. You should exert a little more energy. Then you elders will not tire of your perpetual journey and yet will not turn away from the monastery." He continued, "An ancient has said, if you wish to be able to bear this matter, you must go and stand atop the highest mountain and walk on the bottom of the deepest sea. Only then have you some power." Doyo said, "If you have not yet taken care of the great matter, for now you must tread the hidden road." A monk then asked, "What is esteemed by an ascetic?" Doyo said, "Where mind's consciousness does not reach." Another monk asked, "What are the grades of Buddhas and patriarchs?" Doyo said, "Both are grades." A third monk asked, "What is the meaning of the coming of Bodhidharma from the West?" Doyo said, "Meeting no one on the ancient road."
Manisha, the whole Western approach and the Eastern approach to understand reality has been diametrically opposed. The West has believed in the body, in the outside world, in matter. Therefore, a great science has arisen out of all this search. Science with all its branches, physics, chemistry, or medicine. But the basic thing is they are all denying the inner reality of man. And the East is focused totally and unconditionally in the search for the inner. Who is residing within you? The body has always been taken just as a house, just like clothes you wear. You are not your clothes, and you are not your body. You are not even your mind, then what is left? An utter silence. In this silence have arisen the heights of consciousness like Gautam Buddha. And these heights are not unavailable to anybody. They are available to you and to everybody else, whoever is ready enough to take just a little turn from the outside to the inside. These anecdotes are concerned with this turning point. One day, Ungo Doyo went up into the hall and quoted Tozan's old saying, "Hell is not really painful. Wearing this robe, to fail to understand the great matter, that loss is most painful." Now you have to understand the symbols and the metaphors of Zen. Hell is not really painful because there is no hell other than your being outside yourself. And there is no heaven other than being within yourself. Hell and heaven both are just metaphors. They do not denote to any reality. All the religions have made much fuss about them. Their whole exploitation of man depends on two things: fear of hell and greed for heaven. It is such a contradiction that all these religions go on teaching against fear, against greed, and underground their whole teaching is based on the fear of hell, that if you are not virtuous, if you are not a believer, you will fall into eternal hell. You will be tortured for eternity. And if you are a believer, a faithful, virtuous, respectable person, then the doors of heaven are open for you. It is a contradiction because hell is a metaphor only for fear, and heaven is another metaphor for greed, for lust. Zen does not consider them at all of any significance. That's why Tozan says hell is not really painful. Don't be bothered about hell. The real pain is that you are wearing the robe of a monk, a sannyasin. You have declared yourself as a seeker of truth. And still you are not going within words. You have not yet found the way. And your inner world is not very far away. This turning is called the great matter. Wearing this robe, to fail to understand the great matter, the science is only trying to understand matter. What about the great matter? What about the scientist himself? Albert Einstein may have discovered great things about the matter, but what about himself? He knows nothing at all. He has never even thought that there is another universe waiting for you to be explored, and that is your real universe. The outer will be lost with your death, but the inner will continue. The inner is your ultimate pilgrimage. Hence, it is right to call it the great matter, the great and ultimate concern. This is the most painful thing according to Tozan, that your paradise is so close and yet you go on missing it. Your Buddhahood is just a question of opening your eyes, becoming a little more alert than you are, a little more conscious, and you have entered into the timeless reality of existence. Its splendor is great. It has no beginning and no end. This is the most painful part for anyone who has realized his own self. He can see millions of people in suffering. What is there in the world except suffering, except misery? Except pain. Every pleasure turns into pain. And all your joy is so superficial. Not even skin deep. It can be disturbed with a single word uttered against you. That is the depth of your joy. What are your riches? They will all be taken away. What are your possessions? You have come into the world naked. And naked you have to go out of this world. And if you don't search, who has come and gone and become involved into non-essentials of life, this is the greatest pain possible. To live and yet to miss the source of life. To live only superficially, never going into depths of your being and never going to the heights of your consciousness, just remaining mundane. This is the most painful thing according to the Eastern approach. And I absolutely agree with it. Addressing his monks, Doyo said, "You are already within this tradition. 100% is not far from 90%. You are already a Buddha, just 90%. And 100% is not far away. And remember one thing. That even 99% will not be close enough. Even 99.9% will still be distant. You have to be 100% here and now at the very center of your being, and suddenly arises within you a new, fresh, eternal consciousness that knows nothing of pain, nothing of death, that knows no beginning and no end. Your potential has blossomed into a lotus. You must have seen Gautama Buddha's statues sitting on a lotus. That lotus is symbolic of the blossoming of consciousness to its ultimate possibility and potentiality. 100% is not far from 90%. You should exert a little more energy, then you elders will not tire of your perpetual journey and yet will not turn away from the monastery. A Tibetan saying is that 100 persons start to seek the truth and perhaps one reaches only. 99 get lost somewhere on the way. Either they become involved into some other business, or they go astray from the point. There are thousands of ways of going astray, and there is only one way of going into yourself. Just a single inch difference and you are last you will not find yourself. Every thought is trying to take you astray. Every feeling, every sentiment, all the qualities of your mind are enemies as far as the discovery of your center is concerned, because they are all pushing you forward, outward, become a success, become prestigious, be more powerful. And your inner being remains starving. You go on pouring your energy into the outside world, which is not really your home, and your real being is starving inside, waiting for hundreds of lives, hoping that one day you will turn back, hoping that how long you can go on missing. I am reminded of a great king who was a lover of archery. And he himself was an adept, a master of archery. He was passing from a village and he saw on every tree arrows stuck exactly in the middle of his circle. He could not believe his eyes that in this village such a great archer lives. He stopped his chariot and asked the people, "Who is this master archer?" They laughing. They said, "Don't bother about him. He is the village idiot." The king said, "Whoever he is, but he is a great archer." The villager said, "You don't understand his strategy. First, he shoots the arrow and then makes a round around." Obviously, he is 100% successful. He never fails. In the inside world, you cannot deceive in such a way anyone. Either you know your center and then you simply become radiant and fragrant, a dance unto yourself, and if you don't know it, you may pretend that you are happy, but it is all hypocrisy. Have you ever thought about all the stories end up with the marriage of the hero and the heroine with the sentence that afterwards they lived happily. Afterwards. In every story, you cannot find a single story in which this afterward they lived happily does not come, because afterward is the hell. It is better not to talk about it. All the pleasure is before the marriage. By the time the honeymoon ends, everything is finished. You will be fortunate if your love can survive honeymoon. 2 weeks is too much. Two weeks together, just exploring the same geography, you cannot defeat Sardar. He's really a nice fellow. He has lived many honeymoons. He is not laughing out of ignorance. He knows it. Becomes fed up. Even to ask human beings more than 2 weeks to be together is absolutely inhuman. Because then comes misery and suffering, and this misery and suffering is perpetuated by all churches and all religions, because if there is no misery and no suffering, who is going to the churches? The fellows you find in churches are those who are suffering and asking God that why you are so hard on me? Could not you give this woman to somebody else? An old Jew was dying. A Catholic priest was passing by the site. He was dying on the road in an accident. The Catholic priest, out of great Catholic mercy, went near to the old man and said, "Remember, God, His only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, the Holy Ghost." The Jew opened his eyes and said, "At least at the time of death, don't give me any riddle. Death is enough. Now don't torture me with riddles. God, the only begotten Son, and the Holy Ghost, But the priest said, you were praying, I saw your lips moving. He said, yes, I am praying. I am praying to God that God, for 4,000 years we have been your chosen people and we have suffered enough. Now you should choose somebody else. Everybody is suffering more by his friends than by his enemies. Because nobody marries enemies. The marriage is a contract between possible, potential enemies. Within 2 weeks, everything will be clear. But then the religions force them to remain together, suffer, be miserable, and pray to God. And by the way, God exists not. So your all prayers are just going into the empty sky. There was no one to respond. But everybody in the world is living in all kinds of miseries. He has chosen those miseries. An ancient parable in India is about a very rich man, very successful, so rich that even the king had to borrow money from him. He has everything that was possible, but he was very sad and always miserable. Always a long face. And a young man used to come every day to give him massage. He was always happy. He has nothing to be happy about. That was the problem for the rich man. The poor fellow got 1 rupee per day. In those days, rupee was really rupee. Rupee means gold. One rupee was enough for 1 month to live happily. That poor man was not poor. He was living so joyously and playing on his flute in the middle of the night. The rich man was worried because this fellow has nothing except 1 rupee every day. Why he is always so happy, so smiling, so laughing, playing on his flute, singing, dancing? Because he lived just by the side in a small room that the rich man has provided him. The rich man asked his friend, who was also as rich as he was rich, that what could be the reason of this poor fellow's being so happy? His friend said, I will give you the answer. And that night, suddenly the poor fellow woke up. Somebody has thrown a bag from the roof containing 99 rupees, and that was the last day of his happiness, because now he started to think how to save some money and make it at least 100. He has never bothered. 1 rupee was enough to live as richly as possible. Now, he could not use the whole rupee for the day. He has to save. When it became 100, the desire jumped up, flared up. If he goes on collecting, soon he will have 200, 300, 400, and as more and more money started collecting, he became more and more miserable, continuously thinking of money. The song disappeared, the dance disappeared, the flute was heard no more. One day when he was massaging the rich man, he asked, "What has happened to you? You don't look happy anymore. Has some calamity happened?" He said, "Yes, a calamity has happened. Somebody has thrown 99 rupees into my house, and since that day I have not slept well. Because the desire has become aroused to have more and more. And once you have the desire for more, life is misery. It may be knowledge, it may be money, it may be power, it may be anything that you start desiring, you become more and more sadder. It is such a difficult world. In one psychiatric hospital, the Prime Minister of the country was visiting, and the superintendent of the hospital was explaining him about every inmate. One man was just crying and crying and beating his head with the wall. The Prime Minister asked, "What is the matter? What happened to this poor fellow?" He said he used to love a woman but could not get married to her. His suffering is intense. And in the next room, another man was doing the same act, beating his head, tearing his hair. The Prime Minister said, "What happened to him?" The superintendent laughed. He said, "Nothing happened. He married the same woman." Misery is bound to be there whether you marry the same woman or you don't marry the same woman or the same man, whether you go into this profession or into that profession. Everywhere you will find yourself miserable, because always there is more, and life is fleeting. Moment to moment death is coming closer, and you have not achieved the goal. Outside is nothing but misery. We can try to have masks, we can try to smile when in fact we wanted to weep. Friedrich Nietzsche exactly has written that sentence, that don't be befooled by my smiles. I smile only when I want to hide my tears. I don't want to expose my wounds to anyone. It is so humiliating. And it becomes even more painful to see that how close is the door of your paradise. You are carrying it. A Sufi story makes it clear. Mullah Nasruddin was carrying his door. Somebody asked, "What are you doing?" He said, "I am going for some work into other town." They said, "You can go, but why you are carrying this door?" He said, "You are absolutely unintelligent. If there is no door in my house, how any thief can enter? I always take my door with myself." It is a Sufi way of saying that your door of paradise is not somewhere beyond the clouds. It is just within you. And except you, nobody else can enter into it. He continued, "An ancient has said, if you wish to be able to bear this matter, you must go and stand atop the highest mountain and walk on the bottom of the deepest sea. Only then have you some power." It looks contradictory. How can you manage to be on the highest top of a mountain and at the same time at the deepest depth of the ocean? But inside it is not a contradiction, because inside the highest point of your consciousness is also the deepest point. It is as high as any Everest, and it is as deep as any Pacific. It is both together. And unless you have found this, you don't have any powers. You are just a miserable creature. You don't have even yourself what to say about power. Doyo said, if you have not yet taken care of the great matter, for now you must tread the hidden road. The road, of course, is hidden, because it is not outside a highway. It is a very private, absolutely private footpath inwards, where nobody has ever trodden. You make it by moving inside. At the same time, it is not ready-made there, because nobody can enter within you. Only you can go there. But it is a question of a single step. The journey is not long. The moment you close your eyes and start looking inwards, suddenly you are amazed that this is what you have been searching for, lives together, and it is just hidden inside you. The road is hidden, but not long, just a single step. A monk then asked, what is esteemed to be an ascetic? Doyo said, where mind's consciousness does not reach. You must have heard definitions of an ascetic in Zen. They are not accepted. In other religions, the ascetic is one who tortures himself as a sacrifice to have God's blessings, who becomes a sacrificial lamb. He hungers, he starves, he beats his body, he remains naked. In winter, in summer, by ascetic is meant somebody who sacrifices his body and bodily pleasures in search of God. Zen has a totally different approach, because this kind of ascetic is simply a psychological case. It is nothing to do with religion. And how, even if God is there, He will be happy by our starvation. By torturing yourself, you are simply proving that you are a masochist. You are enjoying torturing yourself. It is said the perfect marriage is between a masochist and a sadist. Sadist is one who loves to torture. And the masochist is one who loves to be tortured. This is the perfect marriage. But it is very difficult to find any perfection in this world. Once in a while it happens. All the religions have been teaching psychological sickness to people. Zen has nothing to do with any psychological sickness because it is not an exploitation of your sickness. It is a sharing of joy and bringing you to your wholeness and health. It defines even a word like ascetic as where mind's consciousness does not reach. That which is beyond mind, where no thought can reach, but only pure silence, serenity. In that silence, in that meditative state, you achieve your own innermost treasure. Another monk asked, what are the greats of Buddhas and patriarchs? Our mind always thinks in grades, in hierarchies, in bureaucracies, who is higher, who is lower. But the moment you transcend the mind, you also transcend this tendency of categorizing. Then whether you call the beyond the Buddha are the enlightened one or the awakened one, you can call him the master or the patriarch. But there is no difference in their consciousnesses. They have all done a single thing. They have left their mind and body behind. And they have centered their wholeness just within unmoving. This is the greatest blessing that is possible for man. In this moment you become a Buddha, a God yourself. Remember the difference. Other religions are trying to pray to God. Zen is trying to discover God in you. There is no other God than your pure consciousness. And your pure consciousness is not yours. It is simply consciousness. It covers every other consciousness. It joins hands with the universal consciousness. You disappear like a dewdrop. The ocean remains. But this disappearance in the ocean is such a benediction. The only benediction there is. A third monk asked, what is the meaning of the coming of Bodhidharma from the West? These are traditional Zen questions. Doyle said, meeting no one on the ancient road. These small questions have been answered thousands of times by different masters in different ways, but always bringing a new light to it. Now Doyle is bringing a tremendous new insight that Bodhidharma came to China from India, wanted to meet no one, wanted to meet someone whose ego has died, who is no more a personality, but only a presence, just a fragrance. Wanting to meet no one on the ancient road. All the Buddhas have been moving in search of those who are ready to disappear into the ocean. Here, this is what we are doing, trying in every possible way to put aside the mind given by the society and to bring our innocence, the gift of nature, and disappear into the silence. The sky and the trees, if your thoughts stop, you stop, then what remains is divine dance of consciousness. Hakuin has written a small poem, you no sooner attain the great voyage than body and mind are lost together, heaven and hell a istra, the Buddha realm pandemonium symbols. Listen, A nightingale strains her voice, surrendering the snow. Look, a tortoise wearing a sword climbs the lamp stand. Should you desire the great tranquility, prepare to sweep white beads. These small poems stress a single point, that you have to be so receptive, no obstruction to your eyes, no obstruction to your ears, to your sensitivity, that the whole life becomes a music, a poetry, then everything starts looking different. The green is greener, the rose is rosier, the same song. But a new meaning, a new significance. The same mirror, but no more dust gathered on it. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, I do not feel the pain of being a disciple and not understanding enlightenment as I do the hell of those times of being close to you. In fact, I seem to only be able to understand anything at all in the context of you, the Master. You are my framework, my touchstone. Is that okay?" Manisha, absolutely okay. Not only for you, but for every Buddha who is present here. These 7,000 Buddhas are here just to be awakened. And to look into my awakening as a touchstone. Before we enter into our inner doors, a little laughter will be helpful, just to dust and cleanse your mind. Two madmen, Gunsky and Nutzo, are standing in a field within the grounds of the asylum. They are gazing in silence at a beautiful sunset when Gunsky says with delight, "Ah, wow! Ah, yes," replies Nutzo, "really, wow, ah, wow." after a while Nurjo turns to Gunsky and says, you know, for a soul like this, these guys must have spent plenty of money, but they won't even give us $3 to go and see the gorillas in the zoo. Henry and Morris are partners in a tailor shop in New York. One summer, Henry goes on his first hunting trip. When he gets back to the shop afterwards, Morris cannot wait to hear all about it. "Well," begins Henry, "I go into the woods with the guide, but you know me. Within 5 minutes I get lost. So I am walking around in the woods, not knowing where I am, when all of a sudden I come face to face with the biggest goddamn bear you have ever seen. I turn around and run as fast as I can, but the bear is running faster. Just when I feel his hot breath on my neck, he slips and falls. I keep running, but the bear is catching up again. He is almost on top of me when he slips and falls again. Then I run into a clearing with the bear close behind, and I see the other hunters and shout for help. Just then the bear slips and falls again, and the guide is able to shoot and kill him. What? Says Morris, that is quite a story. You are a very brave man. If that had been me, I would have shit in my pants. Use your brain, Morris, snaps Henry. What do you think the bear was slipping on? The distressed young man is perched on the ledge 40 floors up, and he is threatening to jump. The police are pleading with him to return to safety, but he seems determined to commit suicide. A priest is called from the nearby church, and he hurries to the scene. "Think, my son," he intones to the young man, "think of your mother and father who love you." "They don't love me," shouts the man. "I'm jumping." "No, stop," cries the priest. "Think of the woman who loves you." "Nobody loves me. I'm jumping," he shouts back. "But think," the priest begs. "Think of Jesus, Mary and Joseph, who love you." "Jesus, Mary and Joseph," cries the man. "Who the hell are they?" At which point the priest throws down his Bible and screams back, "Jump, you Jew, jump!" Now, Nivedana, give a good beat, and everybody goes crazy. be silent. Close your eyes. Feel as if your body is frozen. Gather your energy inwards. Travel this ancient path to your own center. Deeper, deeper, deeper. And as you go deep, you start feeling a totally different dimension opening within you. This is the great matter, the door to the kingdom of God. The God is within you. Other than there is no God anywhere. To make it absolutely clear, Nivedana, relax, let go, completely die as far as your body and mind is concerned. Just feel the beyond. That is your home. This beyond opens the lotus of your being. This beyond makes you a Buddha. In a lightning moment, suddenly you are no more ordinary. You have become a sacred mountain. Simultaneously at the top of a great mountain and in the depths of a great ocean, where these to meet, that is your very center. This is the center of cyclone. Nivedana, call all the Buddhas back. Sit down for a few moments to realize and recognize where you have been, to recollect the remembrance, the joy, the blissfulness, the ecstasy, so so that it becomes part of your being. 24 hours, whatever you are doing, carrying water from the well or chopping wood, you are a Buddha. To be a Buddha is the destiny of every human being. To miss it is really painful. To get it is to be blessed. Can we celebrate all the Buddhas present here?